Good evening. You are tuned to KGVM Bozeman, Gallatin Valley Community Radio. We're at 95.9 on your FM dial or kgvm.org online. And it is time for the Local Musician Spotlight. This is the June 28th episode, and we've got a treat here tonight. We're going to do things a little bit different than sometimes we do. I'm in the KGVM studios with Tony Policastro.
And, hey, Bob.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
So we're going to chat for a while, and then I had the good fortune to see Tony play a set down at Pilgrim Church. He opened up a show for the True North Duo on Sunday night, so I had the trusty recorder along with me, grabbed everything, and so we'll listen to that, but we're going to chat a little bit first, and man, it's been a long time since the first time. I think I probably first saw you play with the Bridger Creek Boys, I imagine.
Yeah, that was the first, the first band that I was in when I originally moved here back in 2008. Feels like a whole lifetime ago.
Yeah, it's been a little while. So what brought you to Bozeman?
So I got, in 08, I was working at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago. And then I had an opportunity to come out here. It was really weird. I was placing an order for mandolins from Weber Mandolins. And I just offhandedly asked the sales rep at the time. I said, hey, if there's ever a job out there, let me know. And he called me back within a half hour. He said, my wife just got a job in Billings. I have to move. Would you be interested in coming out for an interview? And the rest was really history. I picked up and moved out here, and I really never looked back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just fell in love with it. I was worried about playing music here because I wasn't sure what the scene was like. I really had no exposure to here. I didn't know where I was moving, to be quite honest. I was just moving for the mandolin shop. And I was really surprised at the opportunity and just how much of a thriving music scene it really is once you really tap into it.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, I think it's changed some since 2008, but it was going pretty good back then.
Yeah, and, yeah.
It was, I was just, I think, maybe talking to somebody at the show about bluegrass here, and I think at that time it was kind of the thing, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
there were bluegrass bands all over the place, and that seems to have maybe dwindled some, but there's definitely still some bluegrass out there, and just a lot of other acoustic music still. I think a lot of that around here.
Yeah.
And, it's it never ceases to amaze me how many great musicians there are in such a small place.
I was really fortunate because when I worked at Weber Mandolins, and right beside me, the next desk was John Lowell. So I kind of immediately had a mainline situation. He asked me to come play a jam, and I just ended up meeting a ton of people, and it's just like immediately tapped into the music scene. It felt effortless, but that was just because of the people that were around me, to be honest.
Yeah. It's, it's great to, when life throws you curveballs of the good kind, right?
For sure.
So, and did you work at Music Villa?
I did. Yeah. I worked at Weber for about 2 years or so. And then, the deal was, I'm a player at heart and I love the instruments. I was a really crummy salesperson. It's not in my blood. And the reason why is because when you talk to dealers, people that are reselling the mandolins, they're not really, there is concern about how the instrument sounds, but it's numbers, it's profit margin, et cetera. And I really wanted to talk to players, and that's where the Music Villa thing came in. And I was really fortunate that at that time, Paul had an opening, and it just, again, it was one of those things that worked out. And I look back at my time at Music Villa as some of the most, it was one of the best times of my life, and talk about being surrounded by just great people and awesome musicians, and being able to see everybody even coming through, everybody did strings and picks and whatnot. So they'd come in, and it was just a great opportunity to play a bunch of instruments, meet a ton of people. And it was just, it was a great time. It was a great time in my life for sure.
So, you play a lot of different instruments.
Yeah.
I guess so. Got to see you play guitar and banjo, and I definitely, with I guess most of the time I remember with Bridger Creek Boys, you were usually playing dobro.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
play mandolin too.
Yep.
In everything with strings.
Bass. Yeah, I played bass in a rock band here, Power Wagon, which was a blast. That was another Music Villa kind of connection. I attribute that more to ADD than I do really anything else. You know, it's kind of fun. I mean, you hit a wall on a certain instrument, or you reach a plateau, and I've always found it really refreshing to just switch gears and look at a different instrument, because you just end up getting a different perspective on whatever your main instrument would be. And you just pick up these little nuggets that it's all a two-way street, you know. It's just really, especially with stringed instruments, you know, it's a lot of similarities. Just having that different perspective was something that I found really beneficial. And the dobro has really always been my main instrument. Playing guitar live was a much later addition. You know, I've always dabbled and played guitar, but playing guitar live and composing guitar pieces was something that came much later. Dobro was the mainstay for sure. And it was a great inroad, because of all the players, there's very few dobro players. So it was kind of a niche thing anyway.
Right. Yeah. Not a lot of dobro players around here.
No.
Or anywhere really, I don't think.
Yeah.
So you've recorded some albums. I think I've got a couple from maybe back in 2013.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a newer one, Rodent, is, I guess, maybe 3 or 4 years old now.
Yeah, that came out February of 2020.
Oh.
I wanted to release it on John Fahey's birthday, because he's a big inspiration for me. And shortly thereafter, it was just kind of like, oh, well, I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to play this stuff out ever.
Yeah.
You know, fast forward a couple, 3 years or so, and now I'm actually starting to be able to do that.
Yeah. I haven't checked it out yet, but is it kind of some of the instrumental, if it was kind of, you were targeting John Fahey's birthday, is there a lot of like fingerpick guitar on
it? Yeah, it's I would say it's like a 75% fingerpicked, you know, quote unquote American primitive style. But there's some vocal stuff on there. It's my first foray into, you know, recording my own songs, you know, lyrically, rather songs that I wrote. And I found that really a fun process. You know, I would say in terms of songwriting, I'm pretty new. I'm very green.
Yeah.
But I found it just a really rewarding, self-reflective, cathartic process. You know, it's just some things that I have to get out. That's really the only way I found. So it was a really interesting recording session, because I do a day of instrumental stuff, and then I come in the next day and do vocal stuff. So mentally it was a little bit of a gear shift, but it also made me realize that, you know, in playing a show, I could really be diverse and bring some diversity, you know, not just instrumentation, but being able to sing along and right. play my own songs, the vocal songs.
Yeah. I guess I have this tendency, like I think a lot of us do, to sort of imagine that everybody experiences everything, music included, the same way and stuff. And so I think obviously that's not true. And I know some people that sometimes if they're listening to a lot of instrumental stuff, for some people, I don't think it doesn't hold their attention as much.
Yeah.
I think different people must, you know, kind of cue in and fix on different aspects of the songs and the music. And so having some vocal songs in the mix probably keeps people engaged.
It's a bit of a roller coaster ride, you know, and I've released, you know, full on the first two albums I released were all instrumental. And I just love that. I've always loved instrumental music. I first heard Preston Reed and Michael Hedges, and I was just like, whoa. And it just led me down a path for all those folks, you know, the modern quote-unquote percussive fingerstyle guitar into John Fahey and all those players. And I've just always enjoyed, you know, I find it fascinating how you can conjure up and emote so much without saying anything.
Yeah,
and I feel like that's really a magical thing that, you know, I know I'm always chasing, you know, in a way, and it's something that I think maybe to the listener at some points it sounds like it's easy, but from the writing and creating aspect, it's really not, because you're trying to set a mood and you know, give people that little like kind of the hair raising on the back of their neck a little bit, the goosebumps where you're like, ooh, I didn't really expect that. And it just kind of, to me, it's been really introspective and exploring, you know, how I feel and how I'm able to communicate that through the instrument.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you're writing an instrumental piece, I imagine sometimes you just kind of start with a riff and or a lick and kind of go for it. But as you're developing and building out the piece, are you thinking about the feelings that you're trying to convey? Or
yeah,
like, you know, this is a thing, and I think this is probably a reason why some people maybe don't gravitate toward instrumental music as much, as like, it seems to me like the listener brings probably a little bit more interpretive sense to mm-hmm. it than with vocals, right? I mean,
yeah,
there's certainly different meanings that vocals can have and stuff, but it's not nearly as subjective, I don't think.
Yeah.
And so as you're trying to build up an instrumental song, what are some of the things that help you decide how it's going to take shape?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know if I've ever really, to be honest, I don't know if I've ever really thought about that. The process for me has really always started with the tuning. I love alternate tunings. I think it just brings a whole new voice to the guitar and new opportunities. I mean, you can even play the same chord progression in an alternate tuning and somehow it has a different feel, a different ring, a different timbre. So for me, usually it starts with a different tuning. And then from there, it's really not scientific. It's kind of noodly. I find something that I like, I keep repeating it, and then it just kind of grows from there. I always want to have some sort of main motif that people can really latch onto. And then from there, it kind of gives you a platform to maybe stretch out a little bit. And even when, you know, playing these live, it's really interesting. You know, last night, the show was last night, and I thought about this. I don't really play them the same way per se.
Yeah.
There's different elements that I add, and it really, for me, what it allows me to do is just kind of be there in the moment, which is something I've always really admired in musicians who play live, is to just really capture that in the moment, that time. You know, it's not going to be the same.
Right.
Nothing's ever going to be the same. What was done in the studio was done in the studio, and that was the mood, the emotion, the feelings that day. So then when you're able to play it live, especially, you know, we talked about this a lot last night, the room that we were in, being able to be so subtle and bring this nuance of dynamics, a way expanded dynamic range than what I'm used to playing in.
Yeah.
The only time I've ever experienced that was in the studio. You know, when you play live, you don't know if it's going to be a listening room. You don't know if it's going to be just a bar setting. So instrumental music doesn't really land in a bar setting, although I try. But last night was just a great example of me doing my best to be in the moment. And the more the show went on, the more it was evident that I could be.
Just kind of settle into that.
Yeah.
And let things take their own path.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I love live music, and I particularly like it when that is the MO for the musician. Because, you know, it isn't always, you know, some bands are going to play as much as possible to make it sound like it did on the album. And,
sure.
And I mean, I bemoan this fact, but that seems to be what a lot of people kind of want, right?
Yeah. You know, it's
like,
oh, yeah.
Like the fact that cover bands are so popular.
Yeah.
You know, people like what they're familiar with and stuff. But mm-hmm. for me, the opportunity to discover the unfamiliar and just to see where it could go. And,
yeah.
you know, some nights it goes better ways than other nights.
Yeah.
But just the possibility, I guess, to me is the thing. It's like, well, you know, some nights don't live up to the potential. Some nights far exceed it. And on balance, you know, I'm always happy to kind of take that chance and see.
Yeah.
Because when it far exceeds what you expected, those are, you know, that's the kind of the awesome part to me.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, playing the guitar has been one of those things that does allow me to be in the moment. You know, for somebody like myself, that's generally pretty high strung, you know, I run hot, you know, I redline. And the guitar is one of the few things in my life that allows me to just really be in the moment. I don't really think about what happened during the day. I don't think about what's coming. I'm just there, and it's really freeing. And I admire a lot of musicians that are able to do that. And I always try and conjure that up, because you think of a concert, my personal opinion, and I have a lot of respect for people that can play just like the album. I think that's amazing. Technical ability, and that is something that I admire as well. But for me, what gets me like in my core is to see a musician just wrapped up in the moment, and being able to take it wherever it goes, and really read the room and kind of feel what the audience feels and you know, try and have that reciprocation in a way,
right.
You know, which is not always easy with instrumental music. It's really not, which is kind of a fun challenge, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to really dig in and figure out what it might take to connect and mm-hmm. engage. And so when you compose an instrumental piece and you kind of got it worked out and you're going to start playing it and people hear it, how often do you get surprised by their impression of it? I would guess that I certainly find this, that the way I perceive some of the instrumental pieces, I would think must be quite a bit different from what was in the mind of the person that composed it and performed it.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think when I first started performing and playing, it was more, to be frank, it was really more of an ego-driven situation to kind of, I want to showcase my technical ability.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of the early songs came from. And to be honest, it ended up feeling more empty than fulfilling, you know, like, look what I can do. Like, that doesn't really much.
It might be a bump, but it's kind of a superficial one.
Yeah. It's kind of shallow in a way. And that's not, I'm not dogging anybody with great technical ability. I just, from my perspective, it ended up being more seeking that emotional reaction than like, wow, he can play.
Right.
You know, it's a deeper thing, you know, for me now than it was. And I think every artist goes through that evolution of like, you know, songwriters feel like they have to hit, you know, do all these certain things and have everything dialed in. And I think everybody grows, you know, everybody starts to find their own voice and whatnot. And it's the journey that, you know, I think every artist is on in a way.
When you are, like, you play some duos, mm-hmm. I imagine maybe some of those are those gigs where it's like more difficult to do the instrumental stuff. But if you get a chance to do that, I must imagine it must be pretty significant. The change in the dynamic when you're, you know, hopefully playing off of someone else.
Yeah.
And all of those things that you're trying to do to connect to the audience and kind of establish that connection. Now you've got this other musician that is trying to do the same with you and with the audience. How much different is that?
You know, that's a really great question. And the first thing that pops into my mind, usually every time Charlie Parr comes through town, we end up playing together.
Yeah.
And I would say that, and I've played with a fair amount of folks, I would say that of all the musicians I played with, the dynamic between Charlie and I is very much complementary in that way. Because he plays and he sings and he is very much in it. He's not a set list guy. yeah. And he just kind of goes with the feeling, how he feels and how it's going. And, you know, when he turns to me and it's, you know, time to take a solo, that's my opportunity to participate in that journey with him. So it's a big time give take situation. So it's really the same thing, just that the context is different. The format's a little bit different.
Yeah, I saw you guys out at Pine Creek last year, and my mind was blown. Man, that was just a fantastic night. I mean, I would, you know, I'd have to be direly ill or something to miss a Charlie Parr show, but it was, you know, just that interplay was just kind of really bumped it up a little bit. So, I think maybe we'll take a listen to the show from Pilgrim. It was a great night, and like you said, it was a great room, mm-hmm. and the sound in there is good, and the people that come to those shows are there to listen to the music. You know, there was nobody sitting there talking on their phone or anything. Everybody was pretty enraptured, so it was I thought it was a lot of fun. So we'll give that a listen, then maybe we'll come back and talk a little bit.
Great.
Wow, how are you doing? Good.
Good.
I don't usually bring my phone on stage, but my wife's like going to have a baby like probably today, so. Plus, I got to mind my time as well. We'll kick things off with a banjo tune, if that's okay with you guys. It's a folk show, so I figured we'd kick it off with a banjo tune. Or two. First one I wrote. Thank you. sure I was a mole in the ground. I was a mole in the ground, oh, I would root this mountain down. Wish I was a mole in the ground. Tippy wants a $9 shawl. Tippy wants a $9 shawl. Come over the hill, oh, with a $40 bill. Baby, we've been so long. So long, I've been in a band all with them rough and rowdy men. Maybe that's where I've been. Oh, I don't like those railroad men. I don't like those railroad men. All those railroad men, all they will kill you when they can. Drink up your blood like it's wine. Tippy, let your hair roll down. Let your hair roll down. Oh, and those bangs curl around. Tippy, let your hair roll down. Wish I was a lizard in the spring. Wish I was a lizard in the spring. I was a lizard in the spring. Oh, I would hear my darling sing. Wish I was a lizard in the spring. I wish I was a mole in the ground. I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, oh, I would root this mountain right down. I wish I was a mole in the ground. Thanks, everybody. That first song was a song I wrote named Rusty's Acid. I don't know if I can explain the title here in church, but I assure you it's a fantastic story. And the second one is an old folk song that has a whole bunch of verses, and they come in a random order every single time. Let me play for you another song that I wrote here. It's really quite wonderful to play in a room like this. It's not all that common. I personally get to do that, so to be able to play quietly, I don't know, it's kind of a treat, so thanks for being here, it's really awesome. Thank you. as white as cold wind snow. Lower it down, mark it with a white stone. Keep your eyes, keep them on the road. Coming home to lay on the cold ground, far to sleep the rest of my years. Lay my head upon that white stone. I'm coming home, heading down the road.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. That's a song I wrote some years ago. It's actually a love song. A lot of times I play that, and it's a who died moment. It's not a who died situation. I know I've mentioned this already once. It's so cool to play in a room like this. It's just absolutely bananas. This is just neat, so neat. You guys excited to see True North? Yeah. Good. I'm just gonna tell you a little bit about some of these songs, if you don't mind. This next one is one that I wrote. It was a cathartic experience, as most songwriting is. But this one was a song I'd written out of spite. I was dating, involved with another musician. Things didn't end on a happy note. So I took all the song titles and album names that I possibly could, and I jammed them into one song, which is really fun. Like I said, cathartic. And now I really like the song. I hope you do too.
Show tonight, you'll dance.
fun as it seems. Small town girl in some cheap boots and a secondhand dress. Each little note gives you reason to gloat. And once you're out, just meet up in town by the soul. Wants to listen to your sound. Bones we wear today. Not much you can do to hide that way. Take a look in your closet and see. Bones we wear today. Not much you can do. Damn way. Not much you can do to hide them way. Thank you all very much.
Thank you all very much.
Every time my phone lights up, it's a real panic moment in my brain. It's a real panic moment. I mean, an excited panic moment, not like a, oh no. It's like a, oh, no. I don't know how to feel, actually. I should say that I did break a fingernail before tonight's show. The only reason I say that, I wouldn't even share that with y'all. My oldest son's here with me, 16 years old, Aiden, just had a birthday. My youngest son heard that I broke my fingernail. We were sitting at the breakfast table and he wanted to fix my fingernails. So he grabbed mom's nail polish and he went fixing. And I just don't have the heart to take it off. I just don't. He's such a well-meaning fella in his 2.5-year-old brain. Instrumental song that I haven't really played out all that much. I certainly like it, and well, I hope you do. Thanks. A song I wrote called Moments Before. Interesting, weird thing happened at the studio before I went in to record it, actually. And that's what actually ended up being the name of that song. That's where it came from. I'm going to play a song now that, isn't it funny? Every show you go to, I'm going to play you a song now. Like, what else are you going to do? Like, I guess if you're me, you just yap. I'm going to play a song that was written by a friend of mine, and I came in here, I was thinking folk songs and no covers, but I have to cover this one. This is a song that a friend of mine wrote, worked with him at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago, actually, carrying on the folk train here. And this was the first song I ever played live, ever, with him. I played dobro with him for some time, and it was the first gig I ever did, first live performance, the whole deal. So it kind of holds a special place in my heart. It's called Up Yonder. Simon Flory, that's the songwriter's name. Simon Flory is his name. He's from Austin. Well, he's not from Austin, Texas. He lives in Austin now. But he's from Indiana. He's got a mule named Merle. Fun facts with Tony Policastro this evening. Play another instrumental tune. Not often I get to bring these out. Just never conducive to the room, you know? You go try and play an instrumental song at a bar, and it's like, good luck. Have fun with that. Just banging on your guitar trying to get one note heard. Thank you all so much. I'm gonna play one more for you. Is that all right, Bob? Do I have enough time for one more?
Yeah.
Really, thank you so much for listening and being here and just coming out on a rainy night and Sunday. You know,
it's all good. It's all good stuff.
I'll just tell you a quick story about this song, and then I'll get to. This is a song that, at a certain point in my life anyway, it's like you kind of look up at the mistakes you've piled up, and you're just like, wow, those are some mistakes. But this was just kind of me getting those out in my own little way. It's called Self-Portrait Number 32. My name's Tony Policastro. Thank you so much for listening. If you guys are interested, I do have some albums here. Just tap me on the shoulder, and I'll hook you up with one. Thanks.
All right. Well, that was the show Sunday night at Pilgrim, and the opening set and True North came up next. They did a great set of music too. So, yeah, it seemed like you were really getting into it and it was clicking on all cylinders.
It felt that way. And I was primarily playing with other folks. Having that solo show was, I came into it pretty full of anxiety and not quite sure, you know, just, like I said, can be a little high strung and whatnot, but settling in was actually quite easy because of the room, because of the people there. And it was great. You know, I had my eldest son was there. He's in visiting from Chicago. So it was a full package. It was a full meal deal.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. You know, every once in a while, everything just aligns.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. So, I mean, you've composed songs. Have mm-hmm. you got anything in mind to like maybe line up another recording or?
Yeah, I'm thinking winter this year, I'll head back into the studio over here down the street, Peace Street Studios, or Jericho Studios, I guess it would be. And Luke, who recorded and engineered the most recent album, Rodent, was an absolute treat to work with. One of the most laid back, supportive recording engineers I've ever worked with. And he really made, you know, that last record, Rodent, was something that I'm really, really proud of. And I attribute a lot of that to him just because of the atmosphere he created. It was kind of like, hey, you want to do that again? I thought it sounded great. It was just super low key, no pressure. He really let me be me, but would add, you know, great feedback.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to get together with him in winter. I've been writing a lot, lots of pieces, you know, lots of pieces. Nothing really fully formed yet. Lots of pieces. But it'll come together. Usually, you know, once the studio session is booked, that's when it's like, okay, let's make these a little bit more substantial.
Gives it a little impetus to get them to gel.
I need the deadlines.
Yeah.
I do. And that's what happened with this last record. I actually booked the studio before I had the majority of the album wrote. And thank goodness I did that. Because otherwise it would have just stayed as an idea. I think we can get in our own way. As artists, we do get in our own way, whether it be perfection or things just aren't ready or, you know, oh, yeah, I got to write more songs. But putting it on the calendar, it's just all the more real. And it just gives you the drive to be like, okay, well, it's not going anywhere. I got to be ready. You know?
Come hell or high water.
Exactly.
That's when it's going to go down.
And I recorded, you know, I for that album that I released in 2020, I think there was 6 or 7 songs that didn't even make it that were recorded. I just didn't feel like it fit. The album was really one of the most cohesive ones that I made, at least, you know, from my perspective.
Yeah.
And some of the songs I recorded just didn't really jive, and I was okay with kind of canning them. I mean, I still have them, but you know, it was a great place to be in to have more and trim it down than be like, oh, I should probably write 2 more. I got fill up side B, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, and that gives you the opportunity to in those selections to manage that cohesiveness and kind of decide on the story for the whole album.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Cool. I was curious, when you're writing now, do you write on the guitar or?
Yeah, I would say guitar and banjo are the two primary ones. Even though dobro is my main instrument, I feel like there are certain paths that are worn in on the dobro, ruts, like musical ruts that I fall into. And I really want to push myself to move away from that. You know, it took everything in me to not bring a dobro last night, but it was a conscious decision in that, like, that's always my fallback.
Yeah.
It's always a comfortable situation. I know it inside and out. I know that if I get in a jam or if I feel like, you know, my brain short circuits or whatever, I know I can get out of it.
Right. Muscle memory will kick you in and just do it
exactly.
for you.
Exactly. And I don't feel that way with guitar or banjo so much. So it was really fun to push myself to that degree and have that challenge ahead of me.
Well, awesome. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to maybe catching you out and about sometime. And again, that was a fantastic show. And I hope people enjoyed the recording. And keep an eye out. There might be a new recording coming out, or go check out Rodent, the two earlier ones.
Yeah, yeah. It's all on Bandcamp is kind of the main thing that I use now if anybody's interested. And that's obviously, you know, Spotify and all the streaming things.
Right. All right. Well, yeah, people keep an eye out and support local music. It's a fantastic opportunity we have here in Bozeman in the Gallatin Valley with the caliber and number of musicians that are out there. They got to get by too. So support them. And that doesn't just mean, you know, click the stream once in a while. It means, you know, get out and see a show, buy a ticket, buy some merch, and maybe buy an album.
Yeah.
And, yeah, thanks again for coming in and looking forward to what's next.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Bob.